Whoa, you went no contact with your family? Like, you don't talk to them at all? Nope, because they're toxic as fuck. Are you also the villain for walking away from your toxic family in order to preserve your peace? Welcome to the Character Outs podcast, where I am on a mission to normalize going no contact with toxic family. Welcome, all you terrible people. Let's talk about it.
Welcome back to the Character Outs podcast. My name is Terry, and I say it every week, but I'm so happy that you're here, but I'm also so sorry that you're here because if you're here and you have found this podcast and this community, it means that you are no contact with your toxic family, all of them like me, or one or two of them. So I'm sorry you're here, but I'm also happy you're here. I'm blessed to be a part of your healing journey. And yeah, today is Sunday. What's going on? Oh my God. You guys, okay, catch this. I hope this isn't TMI, but I'm gonna share anyway. I had a sty, a fucking sty in my right eye. I literally look like Rocky had beaten me up, like I had gotten into a bar fight. But here's the craziest thing. Literally 1 year ago to the date, I had a sty in my left eye. Like, what? And I was talking to my daughter. She was like, "Oh my God." She's like, "You have seasonal anxiety styes." I'm like, valid. I have seasonal anxiety styes. Yeah, so it's been really, really annoying. And I know I sound like a little bitch right now, but like every time you blink, it hurts. I don't know. It's just a pain in the ass. So my whole face was swollen and oh, so yeah, styes are not fun. I've been dealing with styes. And do you remember when we were kids? Like, what was that rhyme that was like, "Oh, don't do that, or you'll get a sty in your eye." I'm like, what did I do? Did I share mascara? No. Did I tell a lie? No, I didn't tell a lie. Why do I have a fucking sty in my eye? Anyway. Okay. So this week has been a good week. It's been really quiet and chill. My baby has kind of had a low grade fever and kind of not feeling well, but I've been here for it because the weather's been kind of cozy. So I'm like, yeah, play hooky, whatever. So it's cute. But one of my babies going back to college today, which is really sad because I've had her home for, oh my gosh, since Christmas, since before Christmas. So it's like, you get used to the energy in the house, and she's a musician, so the snaps coming upstairs and so anyways, I'm kind of sad about it. I'm kind of sad she's going back to school, but excited. Like, that's what we want for our babies. We want our babies to fly the nest, fly the coop, and just support them any way we can. So all right, so today's episode is called "The Chaos and Confusion That She Creates." She, clearly being our narcissistic mother. I feel like this could be like have like multiple chapters. Like, I could do a part two and a part three and probably a part four, because the only thing she ever created was chaos and confusion. But we're going to talk about that today. And I have some notes, but mostly I'm just going to talk, and which is what I always kind of do, and just share my experiences about the chaos and confusion, both internally, and the chaos and the confusion that she would create in our lives externally. And the goal was always to keep us dependent upon her, keep her in control, keep her being the number one person in our lives. But now that we're no contact, the chaos and confusion is not there anymore. And I don't know about you, but when I was stuck in that chaos and confusion, I didn't even know it was chaos and confusion. It just felt so normal. Like, that's what I was used to. And then you step away from it and you go no contact. And I feel like, you're peaceful. And, I don't know about you, but I always thought everything was my fault. Everything was my responsibility. I was the common denominator because I'm surrounded by toxic people and toxic family and blah, blah, blah. And then you walk away from it and you have all of a sudden, even if it's one person, you have peace. You have peaceful relationships. There's no toxicity. There's no chaos. There's no confusion. There's no manipulation. And you're like, wait a second. Oh my God, like, it wasn't me. Yeah. So it wasn't you. Yeah, so that's what we're gonna talk about today. And let's just dive in. So I wish I had something like profound or poetic to open with, but The song that popped into my head for today's episode was a song by the Eagles called Ouija Woman. You know it. Sing along with me. Ready? Ouija Woman, see how high she flies. Ouija Woman, she got the moon in her eyes. Yeah, witchy, witchy woman. That witchy, fucking narcissistic woman, aka our mothers. And while if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know I don't like to stay in the hate and in the bitterness, but you want to know what? What she did was fucked up. Let's just be honest. What she did, the lengths that she went to try to stay in control, to try to fuck up our lives so she could remain number one, was fucked up, okay? And if you're doubting that it was fucked up, let me be the one to tell you, it was fucked up. What she did to you was fucked up. It was not okay. And as we go down this no contact journey, you know, I hope that you have found at least one person to who really understands you and understands your story and your past and where you've come from and isn't gonna say to you things like, "Oh, yeah, it's your mom," or "Oh, fix it," and "Well, how would you feel when they die?" Like, oh, just suck a dick. Like, fuck. Not that there's anything wrong with sucking a dick. Am I being too honest right now? Like, just fuck off. You know what I'm saying? Like, just trust my past, trust what I've been through, because what people don't understand is like we have kept it in for so long. We've told to be silent for so long. And then we finally share our story from a place of peace and no contact. And someone fucking tells us to go fix it. And it's like, no, don't make me feel bad again. Don't shame me back into a relationship, a toxic relationship, just because it's my fucking mother. So, you know how when you go through a breakup and you have like that one friend who knows everything, who's like been through the journey with your toxic boyfriend or your ex or whatever. It doesn't have to even be a toxic boyfriend, but just like when you go through a breakup, like you've got that friend who you can call and be like, "Oh my God, like I'm feeling really sad about it." Or let's say he was a real jerk and you're like, "Oh, I want to go back." Or let's say he was a narcissist. You have that friend who's going to say to you, "Girl, don't you dare call him, block him, remove him from social media, stop looking at him, delete the pictures, move on, you deserve better," right? There are very few people in this world who are going to say that as it pertains to a toxic family member. No, typically people's responses are, "Oh, you need to fix it. Oh, it's your mom, but it's your family." No, fuck that shit. So if no one else in your life is telling you, "Hey, keep walking. It's okay. You're not the villain. What they did to you was fucked up. I'm here. I'll be here. Hey, it's me. I will be your friend and tell you, you don't have to fucking fix it. What they did was not okay. And you are allowed to walk away from your toxic family, to walk away from that toxic narcissist relationship, and you don't have to fucking fix it. It's been your problem, but not your problem, your entire life, and you're allowed to walk away and seek peace and be your authentic self and break toxic generational cycles. So, yeah, I just hope that I can be that friend in your ear saying, keep walking. So, the chaos and confusion that she creates, I mean, it's even just confusing trying to like process it. I've been thinking about this episode all week, and even just there are so many facets, so many avenues that we could talk about as far as the chaos and confusion that she creates. Why? Because the relationship with our narcissistic mother was nothing but chaotic and confusing. It was internally chaotic and confusing. It was externally chaotic and confusing. Whenever our narcissistic mothers were involved in any aspect of our life, especially when she was involved with any relationship in our life, that relationship was chaotic and confusing, always. So even if we were in good times, it was a high level of chaos, like a high level of love. And then when there was bad, there was the extreme, that person sucks, block them, hate them, I hate them. Here's why we should hate them, right? Okay, we'll get into that in a second. But what I want to talk about first is, so I don't know if you've, excuse me, I'm a little burpy today. I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but when I was growing up, I was told a lot of stories, very poignant, very detailed, very frightening stories. And I was also told a lot of stories that were told to me as if they were truth. And you know, it's your mom. Of course you're going to say, well, why would she lie to me? Like, this is a true story. And it's not until you grow up and then you carry these thoughts or these legends or these stories in your head. And then you're like, wait a minute, because now you know you can't trust your mom. So now you're questioning everything that she ever told you. So some of the urban legends that my mother would tell me, I'll start with, like, my family actually had a set of urban legends that were passed down from generation to generation. Yeah. So one of them was that our family was not allowed to sew on Sunday. So it started with, I believe, my grandmother. So one of the urban legends that I remember hearing, or familial legend that I remember hearing since I was a baby. So my mother was the oldest. Then Terry, who I was named after, who died in the fire, and then Davy. He died when he was 6 from what they believe was Reye's syndrome, and which they didn't know about back in the 60s. He probably had a high fever, chickenpox, and they gave him baby aspirin. And so they think that he died of Reye's syndrome, but it was horribly, horribly traumatic. Like, he died in the house. It's fucking horrible. Horrible. So I've said this before, I understand where my family trauma comes from and why my family is the way they are. But I had Dave from Healing After a Narcissist on recently, and you know, you guys heard him say, like, trauma is one thing. I can understand trauma, but trauma does not excuse abusive behavior. So that's that. Anyway, oh, my grandmother also lost a child at birth, baby Eddie. So actually he was the firstborn. But there was this urban legend in my family that you were not allowed to sew on Sunday because apparently my grandmother had sewn something for baby Eddie and she sewed curtains for Davy and both of them died. So the legend was, if you, whoever you're sewing for, they're gonna die. And I remember my mom, like, held that hard, fast rule. Like, I remember getting into sewing when I was a little bit older and, like, being a teenager, and she would be like, no, it's Sunday, you can't sew. Like, I couldn't even sew a button onto anything. Like, that's how deep this fear ran. And then, I know I've shared before on the podcast, there was just an understanding before my first son was born that the firstborn son died. Because my mom lost a son at birth, my grandmother lost a son at birth, my mom lost a son at birth, my brother lost a son at birth, and then when I was about to give birth to my first son, I was like, oh my God, here we go. Yeah, so lots of crazy things, but I don't know, I'm just going to share this story because I've shared other stories about, you know, God and spirituality, and I'm just going to share it, you can connect with it, however you feel. But I was just actually talking to my husband about this morning. So one time I was young. I hadn't even gotten pregnant with my first yet. And I was having miscarriage after miscarriage. And that was like my number one thing, was I wanted to have a baby. So I remember talking to my friend, and she was very religious, very spiritual. And I remember telling her that the firstborn son always in the lineage had died. I told her about my numerous miscarriages. I told her how the cord was wrapped around my neck 3 times. And she was like, oh my God, Terry, like, your family's under a generational curse. And that was the first time I'd ever heard anything like that. And she's like, you need to go get your husband right now and pray. And I want you to pray. So I was married to my ex-husband at the time, and he came in and actually put his hand on my stomach. And my friend prayed with me over the phone to break this generational curse. Oh, she also said to me, you know, how does your mother and her mother get along? I was like, oh, they fight like two cats, like, in a box. Like, they don't get along. And she was like, well, that's another sign of a generational curse. So I was like, oh my God. So she prayed with me and I got pregnant the next month with my daughter Tiffany. So kind of cool. And I don't know, I always look back at that time and I feel like I was being prepped even then. And that was in 1999. It was 1999. And I was still very enmeshed in my toxic family, still very much under my mom's spell, very much she's my best friend, there's nothing wrong, nothing to see here, move along. But I don't know, when I look back and I look at that, I'm like, I just feel like it started then. Like I started breaking the generational cycles, the generational curses then, and it took, I mean, years and years and years and years later, decades later. So that's that. And I totally went off track for that, but I don't know. That's kind of how this podcast is. Like when a story comes to my head, I'm gonna share it. So I just shared it. But okay, as far as the urban legends, like, yeah, do you have any urban legends in your family that were passed down to you? And typically an urban legend is riddled in fear. And you know, I don't think in this case, like these urban legends were said to us to keep us within the family. It's just an example of how kind of toxic the system is. Because what is the basis for not sewing on Sunday? What is the physical medical evidence for losing your first son? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. And I'm not a big perpetuator of fear. Like I'm one to like defy superstition. And I'm like, if a black cat crosses my path, I'm like, hey, bitch, what's up? Or like, if there's an open ladder, I'm like, I'm gonna go under it just to defy superstition, you know? And I've always tried to pass that down to my kids too. Like, oh, that whole like just aspect of fear within the family and the generations. But when we were told stories as kids, we took them as truth. So those were the family urban legends in my family. And there were more. I'm having a difficult time thinking of them. And even thinking of this episode through the week, like I said, I feel like there's gonna be like a chapter two and chapter three. But what my mother was also famous for is telling me literal urban legends that I swear to God, carried them as truth in my purse well into adulthood and like modified my life according to them. So one of them was, and this is a silly one, I'll just start with the silly one. So last year I got my cartilage pierced and I was like freaked out because my mom told me that if I got my cartilage pierced that it would paralyze the side of my face. So I don't know if I've shared this before. When I was 14, they think I had shingles or chicken pox or whatever, but I got Bell's palsy on the right side of my face. And I wasn't able to move like any part of my face, my eyes, my mouth, nothing. It was horrible. But that was a very scary thing for me. And as a teenager, and so I don't know, my mom would always like use that, like, no, you can't get your ear pierced right there because oh, your face will get paralyzed again. Or she would be like, no, don't pop any pimples on your face in the T, in the butterfly zone, she'd call it, because you're gonna hit a nerve and you'll paralyze your face. Like, I understand that she probably didn't want me popping pimples because it would give me scars, right? But like, why fucking attach it to that fear? Or if you don't want me to get so to go back to the first urban legend that she fucking told me. So I finally went and got my cartilage pierced this past year with one of my daughters, and I said to the piercer, here I am, 46 years old, right? So if you do this piercing, like, is it gonna cause paralysis in my face? He literally looks at me, he goes, the fuck is wrong with you? And I was like, well, that's just what I've been told. He goes, who fucking told you that? And I was like, my mom? He goes, yeah, the only reason your mom told you that is because she didn't want you to get a piercing. I was like, oh yeah, you're right, that's true. Yeah. But like, how many weird ass shit has your mom said that we carry as truth throughout our lives, right? I remember another story she told me. I was a teenager, probably even like a tween, like not even sexually active yet. And I remember AIDS was like coming up. It was in the news. And I remember one time she sat me down. She's like, Terry, I have to tell you this story. It happened to my friend. And she'd always say, like, it was her friend. This happened to her friend. And she'd have these elaborate stories, right? And there was no way for us to fucking cross track. Like, we didn't have Google. We were 80s and 90s kids. We couldn't fact check our own fucking parents. No, we just fucking believed what they told us. So she sat me down and she was just like, you're not going to believe what happened to my friend. So she met this wonderful man and he swept her off of her feet and he was everything she could have ever asked for. And she went to a hotel with them and they had sex. And the next morning, there was a letter by the side of the bed that said, I have just given you AIDS. I know, like, even now as I'm saying it, I'm like a little speechless, like. But I remember being so fucking scared to have sex. Like, I was like, oh my God. Not only scared to have sex, but also scared to trust a man, scared that, oh my God, something is so wonderful, because that's not really, someone's trying to harm you and hurt you always. Don't trust anyone. Like, that one story was wrapped in so many different toxic messages. It's not even funny. And it's the fear factor. And I also think it was a fucking lie. Like, it was a lie. Like, as I grew, there was never a friend who emerged that was struggling with AIDS. Do you know what I mean? Like, that friend never came around. I know, looking back, because I know that was my mother's MO, was to tell me very detailed stories if she thought I was going to go down the wrong path. And, you know, again, going back to the fact that our mothers are not all villainous, like, I appreciate that she wanted to keep me on the straight and narrow. However, the use of fear and lies is not the way to keep your kid on the fucking straight and narrow. Like, all that did was perpetuate fear. But again, it kept this narrative of fear. I can't be away from home. I can't travel away from home. I can't trust anyone other than my mom. And I really need to stay close, and I need to stay, you know, close to her advice and what she says, right? But then this is where the confusion comes in too, and the chaos. So she would always drive home the point that I needed to be honest, which I appreciate, because I am honest to a fault, a fucking fault. Like, I will throw myself under the bus to tell the truth. I cannot lie. I cannot fib. I can't fucking do it, which is a good thing. But I, growing up, she would always say, oh, I don't, you know, you're not allowed to lie. You tell me the truth all the time. But then she would bring me into her lies. Did your mom ever do that to you? Like, if she was in the midst of lying to someone or fabricating a story about someone, she'd bring me into her lie. And then she would say, oh, but let me tell the story, because I don't want that lie on your soul. Ha, ha, ha. You know, basically saying, you know, don't lie, but it's okay for me to lie at this point, at this, and look what a good person I am, because I'm taking on the lie for you. You're not taking on this lie. So she'd push that I had to be truthful and honest. And she would also tell me that she's truthful and honest, which I believed for so fucking long, but yet I always saw her lying. It was so contradictory to me. I was like, you're telling me you're always honest and you never tell a lie, and you're telling me to be honest, but you always fucking lie, and you do really deceitful things, like really deceitful things and really shitty things, and you lie about people, and I'm watching you lie, and I'm watching you not live your life with integrity, but yet you're telling me that you live a life with integrity and that you're truthful and honest and that I need to be truthful and honest just like you. But like, literal mind-numbing confusion. My mom also told me stories when she would be trying to teach me a lesson. And this is kind of off topic, but kind of on topic. So my mom, looking back, I was a teenager, and when I would take a shower, I'd always leave the razor like at the end of the shower. And I remember my mom coming in and she's like, Terry, you need to stop doing that. You need to stop leaving the razor by the edge of the bathtub, because my dog at the time, Beamer, she's like, Beamer's gonna get it, and she could chew it and you know, hurt herself, and you need to listen to me because, you know, I'm right and I know that this is going to happen. So I remember fucking putting that in my head because I didn't want to hurt my dog. And I remember thinking like, God, like, wow, that's pretty weird that like a dog would want to chew a razor. Like I've had dogs my whole life and I've never like, and I've had dogs since then and I've never had a dog chew a fucking razor. I'm just going to say that right now. But anyway, I was like, okay, you know, I'll make sure I put the razor up next time, right? So I'll never fucking forget. She was in her room and I had come out of my room and what do I see? I see Beamer chewing my pink razor. And she was not little, but she was like a 60-pound Rottweiler. Like, I loved this dog. And there she is chewing the razor. And I was like, oh my God, like my mom was right. And I may have even argued with her and been like, well, you know, why dogs don't chew razors. Like, okay, I'll do it. But I remember thinking this is weird, right? But sure as shit, I walk out and I see my fucking dog chewing the razor. And she was bleeding and I quickly took the razor from her and threw it away. And I like tried to clean her up. And my mom never asked me about it. Like, I don't know about you, but my narcissistic mother was in my fucking business asking me about fucking everything. You mean to tell me she didn't notice that the dog had a cut on her fucking lip? You know what I mean? You mean to tell me that she didn't notice that the razor was in the trash can? Like, she fucking knew. So I look back on that too, and I'll never forget Beamer had a little white scar on her lip, like for the rest of her life. And I remember feeling so fucking guilty. But here was the lesson. Listen and obey mom. Even if you don't agree with it, listen and obey mom. And I know this sounds far stretched, but if you come from a toxic family, if you come from a narcissistic mother and you are now no contact, you fucking question everything. You literally question everything. So I sound a little psychotic right now, but I'm just going to say it and hope that it resonates with some of you who are like, yeah, no, I've had that same feeling. I look back at that story and I'm like, how much do you want to fucking bet that my mother gave my dog the fucking razor so I could catch her with it, so she could teach me a lesson? Chaos and confusion. I'll never know the truth. My mother would never tell me the truth. I'll never know the truth. But yeah, and like I said, I've had dogs in the past. Like it was just odd. It was just, ugh. So on my playlist, I have this song called Winter Weather, and it goes, I love the winter weather. It's a jazz standard. And my grandfather was a fantastic pianist, musician. I know I've spoken about him before. Okay, this is another area where my mother would cause chaos and confusion. So when she would talk about my grandfather, she always talked about him in a very glorified sort of way, especially when he had passed away. But then when I was growing up, she would vilify both my grandmother and my grandfather. I was not allowed to have a relationship with them. Only through her was I allowed to have a relationship with them. When she was in a fight with them, I had to be in a fight with them, so much so that I'd go to their house and I would have this just undercurrent of hate for them because my mother didn't like them. But yet she was pushing this, oh, Beget is so wonderful and, you know, he plays piano and his piano music and the piano and piano and blah, 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 blah. But yet I was also told what a misogynist he was. She didn't have that word in her vocabulary, but, you know, what a jerk he was and, you know, what an enabler he was and what a weak man that he was, you know. So I was told all of these conflicting messages about my grandparents. So, and that's the other thing, like, you never know who's the hero, who's the villain. There's always chaos. So another area that my mother was completely ridiculously confusing. So my entire life, we heard about New York. New York is the best place to live. Nowhere like New York. Everything is better in New York. We would visit New York when I was a kid, and because my mom lived in New York, and we followed my grandparents down to Florida when I was two. So I grew up in Florida, but her at nauseam, I heard about New York. We would, like I said, we'd visit New York and, oh, it's just such a wonderful place to raise kids and blah, blah, blah. Oh my gosh, New York, New York, New York. Like it's comical. Until I met my now husband who lived in New York, but my mother lived in Florida. Well, what do you think happened? I've shared it on the podcast before. When I was ready to move to New York with my kids, all of a sudden New York became like a cesspool of disgusting terribleness. And she would literally go behind my back and say to my kids, New York is really bad and you're not going to fit in and it's very dark. You're going to be very sad. And, you know, I remember when my daughter came to me crying and she was just like Gia said that New York was really dark and I was going to be sad and, oh, and like really damaging. And it wasn't until my daughter was like, how fucked up is it that like the only thing Gia ever said to us our entire fucking lives was how wonderful New York is. And now when we were faced with the opportunity to go to New York, she shit talked it. Like what? And it just shows you the narcissistic mother doesn't give a fuck about what you want, about your opportunities, where your life will take you. No, my mother was losing control of me, of her grandchildren. And so she went from talking about this place that she had loved and adored and it's perfect, but now, oh, it's a shithole because now we're going against her plan. Chaos and confusion. And that was especially true when it came to my relationship with my brother. So my brother's 10 years older than me, and I was always told, I've said this before, that he was an amazing brother. He was like my father. He actually walked me down the aisle in my first marriage. He was amazing. Like, he wasn't really. Like, when I look back, he was really distant. He was dismissive. He was not really empathetic. He was there for selfish reasons. He was not a good person. He was completely egocentric, a complete misogynist. He was not a good person. He didn't take care of me. He wasn't a good friend. He never stood up for me and protected me from my mother. He never fucking did, ever, 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 ever. And when I got older, there was one thing that he said. I don't think I was no contact yet, but he was like, yeah, you know, it's good to see that you're making your way, and mom really had her hold on you for a while. He said something to that effect. And I remember thinking, yeah, and what'd you do about it? What'd you fucking do about it? So you mean to tell me you saw the hold that our mother had over me and you didn't do a damn fucking thing about it? Really? And yet I was told my entire life that you loved me and you were such a great man. Like, are you? And no. No, like none of that was real. I didn't know my brother. My brother didn't know me. My brother knew me through the narrative of my mother. He governed himself accordingly. If my mother was mad at me, my brother was mad at me. I mean, well into my adulthood. Even when my mother kicked me out, my brother stopped talking to me too. I knew my brother according to the narrative my mother told of him. So if my brother was in good standings, then I loved my brother. If my brother was out, then I couldn't talk to my brother. He was a piece of shit. I had to hate him too. Can you believe him? Can you believe this fucking loser? I mean, my brother, this is the funny thing. My mother was bad-mouthing my brother, and she was still talking to him, like, up until no contact. And in fact, I even got on my brother at one point because he was being such a dick to my mom. Like, and I went to my mom's defense. So if you're not familiar, that's something called triangulation. And I didn't know what that meant. I just only recently learned what that meant. So triangulation is when a toxic or manipulative person, often a person with strong narcissistic traits, brings a third person into their relationship in order to remain in control. There will be limited or no communication between the two triangulated individuals except through the manipulator. Mm-hmm. I have seen this happen in so many other relationships with the narcissist, my mother, and other narcissists that I know of. And you know, I didn't have the vocabulary or the jargon associated with narcissism when I was growing up. I just knew I wasn't allowed to have a relationship with my brother apart from my mother. But yet my mother would always be like, oh, I'm so happy you and your brother are so close. Yeah, we're close, but we weren't. No, like we were never allowed to have a private conversation. We were never allowed to have our own relationship apart from her. First of all, she would have accepted it as betrayal. No, she needed to be a part of everything that we discussed. I think one time when I was like 12, my brother took me to Six Flags in Pompano. But other than that, we were not allowed to have a relationship. We were not allowed to talk. And I don't know how we got there. Like, I don't know how we fucking got there. Like, the slow, trickling, controlling, manipulative air of poison in our entire house. Like, my brother and I both, we knew the rules. We knew it. And we knew, hey, if mom hates you, I hate you, period. I don't really know you. I don't really care to know you. I'm not willing to stand up to mom to get to know you. And I'm just as much to blame. I didn't stand up to my mom in order to get to know my brother. My brother didn't do that for me either. We just kowtowed and we obeyed my mom. In a way, I blame my brother, but in a way I don't, because he was just as much of a victim. But, you know, where we are now, like, he knows I'm no contact. He could fucking call me. He could pick up the phone. Does he? No. Does he care to get to know me? No. You want to know why? Because the damage is done. The damage is fucking done. You know, especially, I don't like to talk about other people because I don't know where my brother is right now. I've been no contact with him for about 3.5 years. Listen, for all I know, he could be healthy and in therapy and thriving, right? But I don't know that. All I know is when you get to a place of healing, there's things that you want to heal. There's people that you want to apologize to. There's a growth. There's an acknowledgement of toxic behavior that you did, toxic behavior that was done to you, estrangements that perhaps you need to go fix. Not with your toxic family, please. But I think my mother has poisoned my brother. He doesn't know who I am. He'll never know who I am. He will only know me through the lens of my mother. And I can say that I've honestly tried to get to know my brother apart from the lens of my mother because I was no contact from her. So I could try to have a relationship with my brother apart from my mother, which I tried. And he just can't do it. You know, he doesn't have it in him. For whatever reason, he doesn't have it in him. And so we are no contact, and I'm totally fine with that. So the narcissistic mother will not only cause external chaos via triangulation. Again, I remember her when she would have a friend, we would have to love that friend. Oh, isn't she amazing? She's amazing. And then she'd be on the shit list. And don't you hate that friend? And you can't be friends with her daughter, and you can't be friends with, you have to cut them off, cut them completely off. And here's blah, 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 blah. Like the confusion and the shit list was always changing, chaos. Then there was the confusion and chaos that she would cause internally, which takes a while to untangle because, again, there's so many lies that we were told were truths. And it's not until you catch what was said to you in your head and you evaluate it. And I encourage you to take hold of every thought, everything, every phrase, every story that your narcissistic mother has told you over the years. Just grab it. When you think it, grab it. And I want you to look at it. Look at it under the microscope, and I want you to evaluate it. And 9 times out of 10, it was either a manipulative tactic or it was something that she was trying to use to control you, to keep you in line. But I guarantee, like, it may have turned out for your good and for your benefit, but it wasn't intended for your benefit. And so many times I've looked back and I've grabbed a thought that I've just spit out like truth. And then when you're away and you're no contact and you spit it out and you're like, wait a second. Because when your mind gets healthy and you get away from these toxic people, all of a sudden your mind sounds differently. I've said it before, we are rewiring our brains. We are rewiring our entire lives. And we start to question the thoughts that were always in our heads. So the chaos and confusion too, just about our self-worth, about our identity, about how when we were in line, when we dressed the right way, said the right things, did the right things, were this shell of a person in order to keep the love of our mother, we were praised, we were honored, we were glorified, right? And the second we stepped out of line, we were literal pieces of shit, like on the other side, pieces of shit. And I just remember thinking, but wait a minute, like I haven't changed. Like, what did I do wrong? And I didn't realize what I was doing wrong, but now the only thing I did wrong was stand up to my narcissistic mother. That's the only thing I did wrong, was stand up to her. I went against her in some way, and so then I became a piece of shit. But when someone tells you, especially your mother, that you're a piece of shit, you tend to believe it. So that internal chaos of, you know, she would always tell me, trust your gut, trust your gut. But whenever my gut was leading me down a path that I thought was right, but it wasn't according to what she wanted, all of a sudden I was stupid and incompetent. So she'd tell me to trust my gut, but what she was really teaching me was to trust her gut. Don't trust your gut. Your gut's wrong. My gut's always right. And this is exactly where she would insert the story to create fear, to change my path, the story to create fear, to keep me in control and to keep me in line. You know, and she'd always say things to me like, oh, it's not that I'm smarter. It's just that I'm older and I know more things, you know. This wise, wise owl who was just trying to teach me and just keep me on the good path because she only wants what's best for me, right? Yeah, bullshit. So I think it's the internal chaos of those dividing moments of when we're on top and when we're on the bottom. So for me, it's those middle moments where, you know, we're not really thinking about it when we're on the list. When we're at the top and we are not on her shit list and we are the best person in town and we're being love bombed and bought things and showered with compliments, like we're not really thinking about our self-worth then. We're thinking this feels really good and I want to keep it here, but it's not so much about, we're not focusing on ourselves. It's not about a self-confidence building scenario. Do you know what I'm trying to say? We are in survival mode. Then when we go to the down, when we've been discarded, when we've been thrown away, when we're the worst piece of shit on the fucking planet, then we are in self-deprecation mode going, I'm a piece of shit. But we're also in survival mode. We're in, how can I fix it with my mother? I just want to get her love back. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm a piece of shit. Okay, what can I do? I have to make this better. I have to fix it with my mom. So there's never a healthy balance of growth and who am I? Where's my self-esteem? What kind of person am I? So it's the high, high and the low, low. And when everything is calm, you're just waiting for the shoe to drop. There's never any peace. You know, there's that traumatic, like, I know I'm going to be discarded, so I'm going to kind of live it up right now, but I know the discard's coming. Like, we know it. So that turmoil, that chaos that we live in waiting to be discarded is so fucking chaotic. So there's the chaos internally, there's the chaos of the relationships, and, you know, so like I said, so much of our lives we've been told it's us, we're the chaos, we're the problem. And as you break away, and I posted something on Instagram recently, and I was talking about how the quote was, find your people, own your shit, and if that means leaving your toxic family behind, so be it. Right. But I had several people say, yeah, well, you know, it's been years. Like, I still haven't found my people. And anyone out there right now who is still in that survival, not trusting anyone, traumatic zone, like, it's okay. There were seasons where I was alone. I didn't have anybody but my kids. I had superficial relationships. I wouldn't let anybody in. I hated everyone. And you want to know what? Just give yourself a little bit of grace on this healing journey. You've been at the highest of highs. You've been at the lowest of lows. You're grappling with being no contact with your family. That is a huge thing. You're grappling with your self-worth. And especially if you're a woman, women are fucking bitches. They just are. It's very difficult to find a good friend. And then the older you get, it's very difficult. But just know that is the beauty of walking away from your toxic family, because when you're not busy filling their cup and pouring into them and giving them your guts, it allows yourself, even if there's an intermission of alone time and healing, which I think has to happen because I did go through it, when you get to the other side, when you meet someone, a friend or a partner who's able to love you like you should be loved, like you are worthy of being loved, and you are at a healthy spot to love because you are not spending all of your time on your toxic family and you're not spending all of your energy on your toxic family. You're able to love that person in return. Just hang in there, my friend. If you are alone right now, I see you and I feel you. I really, really do. I just don't want you to give up hope because, first of all, you're worthy of love. I don't care what your toxic family fucking has said about you. You are worthy of love. You are worthy of healthy relationships. Chaos and confusion is not normal. Yes, we came from it, but it is not normal. And sometimes when we've broken free of our toxic families and we're sitting in this quiet time, alone time, you know, chaos feels normal. Peace does not feel normal, but sit in that peace, sit in that healing time, and I promise you the doors will open, people will come into your life because you're worthy of it. So just be on the lookout, because I have seen it in my own life where, yeah, it took a minute, but it was a combination of I needed to heal and I also needed to open myself up to, okay, not everyone is horrible. Everything's going to be okay. I came from a shitty family, but everything is going to be okay. And not everything should be chaotic and confusing. You know, and don't forget, it's this confusing place where we still are. And I say it all the time, like so many times I still feel like that 12-year-old little girl who doesn't know what she's doing. You know, I had a mother who would tell me how much she loved me, but then simultaneously, when I would step out of line, discard me. So she told me that she hated me more than she told me that she loved me, because I was discarded more than she told me that she loved me. So even that chaotic and confusing message that we got from the person and the people who were supposed to love us the most, it feels very chaotic and confusing, but that is not how life should feel. That is not how you should feel. So yeah, that's it. Chaos and confusion. I'd love to hear back from you as far as any urban legends in your family, any urban legends that your mother told you that you took as gospel until you took a step back and you were like, wait a minute, that sounds like bullshit. Wait a second. I'd love to hear back from you. I mean, I didn't even get into the chaos and confusion that she brought to vacations and holidays and special moments in life. Like, didn't even fucking touch on that. Just know that this healing journey gets easier. It's never normal, but it gets easier. And, you know, the chaos and confusion settles and goes away the further you are away from your toxic family. So just hang in there, friend. Join us over at the Character Outs podcast on Instagram. We are being fun and snarky over there, and the community is so fucking beautiful, you guys. Like, I love every one of you over there. Love the support. So come on over there and join us. If you want to vent, if you have a question, if you're struggling, if you want to be a guest on the podcast, please reach out to me. I'm just going to put this little teaser out there. So I am actually going to be taking a break. The last episode for season one will air on February 29th. And I'm going to take a break until my birthday, March 18th. March 18th will kick off season two of the Character Outs podcast. And my final episode is going to be with my daughter. So I know a lot of you have reached out and told me how much that episode resonated with you. So if you have any questions for her, if you have any questions for the both of us about our relationship, we will answer anything that you want to know, and we'd love to hear back from you. So we're kind of compiling that episode right now, and we'd love to hear from you. Email me, DM me on Instagram, and let me know what you would love, what topics you would love us to discuss, kind of a Q&A kind of thing. So I will post that on Instagram as well, but just letting you podcast listeners know firsthand. So that's it. I hope you guys are having a beautiful day. I hope you are feeling worthy of love. I hope you are settled in the peace, because when we come from a toxic family, it's a lot of chaos and confusion, and it wasn't normal. It was not normal, you guys. So hang in there wherever you are, and cheers until next time, friends.